of the vast array of learned societies which in today's world carefully guard the information within particular fields of study and credential those who wish to practice one or another scientific craft. Now, the many of the great modern academies are themselves products of the 17th, or perhaps in some cases the very early 18th century. But it is certainly true that no Mesopotamian, no Persian, no Greek carried a membership card in a learned society and didn't pay dues to any organization and go to annual conventions and meet all his buddies. We began with tiny cities in Sumer, little bitty cities, little city-states. Cities have been a constant concern for us throughout these lectures, and yet the world was profoundly rural. One of the interesting paradoxes of the Western tradition, of Western civilization, is we think of it as an urban phenomenon, and yet, in point of fact, through most of its course, the overwhelming majority of people lived in the countryside. For instance, the first British census that showed more people living in cities than in small towns or rural communities was collected in 1850. That point was not reached in the United States until 1920. So despite the importance of cities, the vigor of cities, the interest of cities, the clear place of great ancient cities, Athens and Rome, the importance of Renaissance cities like Florence, the importance of medieval cities like Paris, we are always dealing with a world that was overwhelmingly rural. Now in the period, roughly, 1500 to 1750, the period we're sort of speaking about at the moment, cities anchored themselves really as the decisive elements in the demographic and thus, by extension, in the economic and political landscape. Initially, we may say, for instance, that in this particular period, the greatest growth was in medium-sized cities, for instance, in the British Midlands, for instance, in the Low Countries, for instance, in the Rhineland. In other words, the great story here is not Rome, Paris, London. The great story here is Manchester, Birmingham, you see, is Liège in Belgium, is towns in the Rhineland, and so on. The faint beginnings of urban industrialization were apparent, with all the social and political problems that that process has entailed ever since. The world is going to become increasingly urban, and cities are going to continue to play an enhanced set of roles that are not new in the modern world as compared to earlier times, but that intensify. The psalmist cried out, "What is man that thou art mindful of him?" By the 17th century, as we've seen, a wide array of answers had been given to that question. The great political upheavals of the 18th century, the French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Enlightenment, would provide yet further answers to that question. Some of them predictable out of earlier experience, some of them slightly new. But let's just remind ourselves of some of the ways that that question had been answered in the centuries before the 18th. A skeptic might have said, "There is no God. That's a foolish way of putting the question." But there are lots more skeptics now than there were then. Most would not then have formulated their response to that question in that way. Thomas Hobbes, following certainly in the tracks of St. Augustine and of John Calvin, said that man was a wretched creature, sinful, monstrous, criminal, and always to be restrained as much as possible for fear of what he might do to himself or to others. Not a very happy or optimistic take on the human experience was Hobbes's, man who lived in a primitive state of nature where life was poor, solitary, nasty, brutish, and short. The last defenders of monarchy said that man was a creature most happy when he submitted willingly to those in authority and recognized the God-given order of the state and of the universe.